I love the quote, if you can't take the heat, get your ass out of the kitchen.
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur Showdown. My name is Joe Cassandra. Across from me is my partner, Dan Franks. In round one, we look at employees. Are they costs or are they more investments? It's a big question, especially if you have employees of your own in your business. And then in round two, we look at, are Dan and I, are we frauds for what we're doing? You're not going to want to miss this conversation. So stay tuned in round two. And then we bring on John Dumas, who is, of course, the head of Entrepreneur on Fire. We're going to ask him some of those questions and a lot more. You're not going to want to miss it.
Yeah, John's usually cool, calm, and collected, but we'll see if we can ruffle his feathers a little bit. Might be a challenge, but let's see what we can do, Joe. But before you check out the rest of the episode, hit that pause button and do us like a real quick favor and head on over to the iTunes store. Click subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave us a review. We really want to hear your feedback. Let us know who you want to hear on the show in the future, and we'll do our best for you. And head on over to EntrepreneurShowdown.com for all the show notes of this episode and a little bit more. Let's get on to round one.
Round one.
That's right. It's time for round one of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. And today, Joe and I are going to talk about something that's kind of a big picture topic as far as the business world goes. But it's something that not only relates to large corporations, but I think it also can be related to smaller businesses and startups as well. And that's kind of the question of what's wrong with the culture in business today. You see a lot of times these corporations that are reporting that they're struggling and their earnings reports are really low. They're reporting that things might not be going well in the company, yet you see the people at the top making these huge taking these huge paychecks and getting rewarded these huge bonuses. And there's this level of disconnect there that just doesn't really make sense. And we're actually, what brought this up is a Henry Blodgett's article on the Business Insider. And he says, this one tweet reveals what's wrong with American business culture and the economy. And the tweet he's talking about is somebody who was maybe bringing up the fact that workers at places, fast food restaurants, should be paid more, at the expense of the bottom line profit number for these corporations. And this guy replied to this article and said, no, these employees, they're purely costs. They're trading their labor for money. And that's all they are, is just a line item on an income report. And that's it. So Joe, what do you think about this? Do you think that employees should be treated as line items on the income report and just, you know, all they're doing is trading their time for money? Or do you think that it's better for a corporation to actually treat these people like people?
Well, we don't want to go into like a whole economic discussion. I was interested in this piece because it's for any type of business that has even just one employee, how do you view that person who is providing value to your customers face to face? Even if it is like McDonald's or Walmart or everything like that, they're the ones providing value to the customer. So how do you see them as like someone who's overseeing the whole process, as the one that's the CEO? How do you see them? If you're just seeing them as cost, then you run into the problem of, I guess, putting them in the same line as just every other expense that you have, and ones that can easily just be cut down or thrown aside or everything like that. And like for say it's like your advertising budget, you can do that because that's not someone that's face to face with the customer. That's just an ad in a newspaper. But someone who's there with your customers trying to push to make that sale, if you're putting them on the same line as someone that can just be thrown aside, then maybe in the short term, yes, you're going to save a couple thousand dollars on one employee. But in the long run, what's going to be the overall I guess, like, effect of that. You're going to run into a lot of problems.
Well, I think I find it interesting because you did bring up how this kind of relates to small people, small businesses who maybe just have one employee. And a lot of times with these small startups or these online ventures, maybe they do only have one employee. And in a lot of these situations, that one employee does a whole lot more for the company than the actual owner does. So from your point of view, that person should be getting paid more than the owner because they're actually the ones responsible for the growth or the...
Well, no, I'm not saying that they should be paid more than the person who actually owns it. I'm saying they should be seen as an investment into the company, as an asset, not as an expense, because you're trying to get... When you have someone there that's excited about what they're doing and excited to meet with your clients, other people can see that, and you're able to get more return out of just that one person than if you just treat them as someone that can be cast aside at any moment. And if people that are fearful of just being cast aside and they feel that way, they're not going to produce at the same level as someone who sees themselves as more of an asset to the business than just an expense.
Well, then how do you determine what is the right amount to pay somebody? Because you just said, okay, so all it would cost you is a couple thousand more on your bottom line to actually be compensating this employee fairly and make them happy with what they're doing and maybe get a better service out of them. But then once you do that, then isn't this just like a vicious circle? I mean, who says what's a fair amount and what's not? I mean, these people at McDonald's that this whole article is based on, who says what they're getting paid isn't fair?
Well, people don't say it's fair because it's not a livable wage. Like, they still have to, I guess, like, get subsidies or something like that. They actually, McDonald's, they released a budget for their employees because employees were saying, hey, we're not getting paid enough. So the people up top said, okay, we're going to release this budget and show you that you can live off of a McDonald's job. And on that budget, like, they break out some costs. Some are impossible to justify. But one little piece they made a little smaller. It said income from second job. So they already knew that they couldn't live off of just that McDonald's salary. But they tried to show them, hey, you can live off of it. Oh, by the way, in these small letters, you actually have to get income from somewhere else. So, okay, people get paid more based on how valuable the skills you have, how, I guess, unique the type of work that you do. Like, CEOs get paid the most because there's not as many CEOs as there are just regular workers, and they usually, maybe not always, have a certain specialized skill set, management, whatever. While people in a McDonald's type setting, it's just simple manual labor that anyone can do, and that's why they're going to get paid less. I'm not saying they should get paid as much as a manager because they don't have that managerial skills. Everyone can flip burgers and stuff like that. But you have to make them feel like they are a part of the company and actually producing something for the company, not as just, I can be replaced at any moment. Even if it is a simple job like that, you want them to feel that they are helping grow this company.
So I think this situation might be an easier problem to deal with for somebody who does have just one or two employees. Because look, if you give everybody, I don't know if you pay them by the hour, and you give them a dollar an hour raise, like you said, at the end of the day, that's a few thousand dollar difference on the income statement. But the bigger the company is, that's a much bigger effect. I mean, because then you have to start, okay, well, if you roll up the bottom line salary, then you got to roll up the person right above them, and you got to keep rolling it up. And then, you know, inevitably the CEO, that he's going to bump his up as well. I mean, and I think this article was saying, well, you know, they should just accept it as, I don't know, like you said, an investment in the company to be investing in these employees, which I can see that point of view, but I'm just thinking that's a very micro look at it as opposed to a macro look at it.
Well, because you're looking at just the money side of it, that, hey, you have to have a bunch more money to pay more people. But if you just do other things that don't even have to be compensation stuff, it could just be, well, first, when you give them a raise, list the things and the reasons why they're giving them a raise. Don't just say, hey, you did a good job, here's 50 cents, a 50 cent raise on your hourly wage or whatever. You say, hey, here's a 50-cent raise because I saw you do these things to help our company. This, this, and this. Maybe when even that employee thought you weren't even looking and didn't even realize that. Because that's what a lot of people have trouble with, especially when they go into negotiate a salary. They feel they don't have any leverage because they've never received any prior recognition from their boss. They have no leverage to ask for a raise, which is bullcrap. So if you show them, hey, this is what you've done to help us, and maybe even correlate it to, hey, we increased sales because you did this, or give them more responsibilities and say, if you do this, you will help us grow in this way. And you don't even have to mention any compensation or anything like that. Just show them how they're a part. Because everyone wants to be a part of a team. They don't just want to be a number. And when you have a big company like a McDonald's, it can be hard to manage thousands and thousands of employees. But if you look, if you have just each store, give this type of advice to make them feel that they are contributing to a bigger picture, they're going to feel already more compensated. No, they're not going to have all the monetary compensation that they'll probably need, but they have other kind of compensation. And if they're able to do that, then they're going to put more into the position, and that's going to provide fruit all the way up to the bottom line, the profit and loss statement.
Yeah, well, this is something that we could talk about forever, and we already started expanding a little away from the article.
Sorry, Henry.
but we'll make sure to link. It is an interesting article, and it has plenty of links to all the different studies that it references. So we'll definitely link up to that in the show notes because it's something definitely worth a read. But that's all for round one. So now we're going to take you to round two.
Round two.
That's right. It's round two time here on the Entrepreneur Showdown. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that I have not discussed with Joe because I wanted to spring this on him and get his take on it right off the cuff. And what this is leading into is an interview in the main event with John Lee Dumas. And as most of our listeners know, our round two is usually covering a certain content piece by our guest later on in the show. But since John has a daily podcast and he's interviewing people, and his interviews are kind of similar, each one, as far as his style of interviewing goes, Joe and I wanted to talk about something that maybe would relate to something we can talk to with John later on. So Joe, I got the question for you. Are you and I frauds for hosting an entrepreneurship podcast when you and I have full-time jobs and we're merely, I don't want to call us wantrepreneurs because we're doing things, but we are not full-time entrepreneurs like most other podcasters? Yes or no? Are we frauds?
I mean, it's a question that we've talked about before, like between me and you. And I, like I said before in like another podcast, I feel like I'm in the middle. I feel like I'm in the middle between a wantrepreneur and an entrepreneur, because I've tried to start little things and I've tested ideas for businesses and none of it's really worked. And some may say, hey, you didn't test long enough. Some may say, hey, you're just making excuses. I'm sure it's probably a mix of both. I know in my heart that I'm going to start a company at some point. I don't know when it's going to be. I feel that a little bit that I'm lucky because I'm 25 and I'm realizing this instead of being 50 or something. So that's a good thing. But I mean, it's a totally fair question. And I've thought about it before, like, hey, should we be debating these type of topics? But then I think about, hey, I always wanted, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a sportscaster. And a lot of the sportscasters, not all of them, but a lot of them, they never played any professional sports, but they're fully qualified to talk about their sports. Like Chris Berman, he never played in the National Football League, but everyone trusts his judgment and his thoughts on the NFL. And I feel like we're kind of like the same way. Except that we can at one point get into the circle of starting a company like an entrepreneur. But we can discuss these ideas, and I think it's better that we're discussing ideas than discussing nothing at all. It's just questions that, hey, maybe we haven't been able to practice everything that we've talked about, but maybe someone who's in a position that they didn't know what's going on, if they didn't know about certain advertising or marketing techniques, that they can hear what we said and learn from it. Even if, say, we haven't reached that point in our business career, they could still learn from it.
Yeah, and before anyone thinks I'm calling John Lee Dumas a fraud, I'm not. But he's talked about this before, that when he first started, he was interviewing entrepreneurs, and he called his show Entrepreneur on Fire. But he wasn't quite an entrepreneur yet, and I would certainly call him one now because he's making far more than, I'd venture to guess, anyone off straight podcasts. So he's making well over six figures just off his podcast alone. So I would certainly say he's an entrepreneur now. But in his early days, I think he did get questioned, or at least he questioned himself about being a fraud. So that's what brought the topic up to me. And I never thought about it before until I heard him talking about it. But I wholeheartedly think that we are fully qualified to do this. And the reason why is we've never made any claims that we're these successful entrepreneurs.
No.
We've never told anybody that we have these great startups that we worked on, or these super successful niche websites that are making us all this money and we're just working full time for fun. We've never said that. We've been full disclosure what we do and why we're doing this. And I think based on our feedback we've had in the first 10 or so episodes, a lot of people like that we are almost learning with them. And you and I, maybe some of the things we say about some of these entrepreneur topics are stupid, and maybe these successful millionaire startup people, if they were to listen, they'd be like, oh, they don't know about this or that aspect of starting a business. But honestly, who's our audience? I mean, I feel like our audience is us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hate to pound my chest and say we're the voice of the people, but I think we kind of are. You and I both spent years listening to entrepreneur podcasts before actually starting our own. And most of the people we were listening to were successful entrepreneurs who were doing this full time. So I feel like, and I keep saying things to glorify us, and I'm not trying to do that, but I do feel like if I had found someone like us, I would see that as a breath of fresh air.
Why?
Because I know there's other podcasters out there who aren't successful. They're in our same shoes, but they're putting on this front like they are just because they think that's what's going to make the best podcast. Whereas here we are saying, hey, this is who we are. But this is what we like to talk about. This is what we're interested in. Come learn along with us. And we're going to have these experts on who are the full-time entrepreneurs. And they're the ones that might point us in the right direction, you know, if we're astray. Like, we've asked questions to some of our guests in the previous episodes. And I know they've thought they were stupid questions. And they've not said it up front. But they've kind of said, okay, that's not really a good question. Like, you're looking at it wrong. Or in a past episode, we asked Dane Maxwell about, some of his students had similar ideas, if they would be competing, or, you know, if there was going to be some kind of rivalry because they were trying to compete with the same idea. And he flat out said, if you've ever had a successful startup before, you're not worried about that. You're only worried about doing your thing right. You could care less about, you know, competition. You want to crush the competition. And he basically said, like, you guys haven't done this before, so you don't know. You know, he didn't say that up front, but that's what he was saying. And I'm fine with that because we're learning along with our audience.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't had anyone say to us, hey, you guys are frauds. This is just us bringing the topic to light because we've discussed it, and we want our listeners to hear what we're discussing behind the scenes. And like you said, we're not trying to pretend that we're anything. We're not trying to pretend that we have all this money on the side that we're making with some ventures. We're not doing that at all. We're completely honest, and I think it's a great learning ground for us because we get to talk to all these people, and it's just us being open with everyone and us being open to the people that we interviewed. And we've had some people that we've interviewed that we said, yeah, hey, we work day jobs and blah blah blah, and they're like, oh, you guys work day jobs? I didn't know that. And we were kind of like, I mean, it was kind of like an awkward thing, because I guess they thought that we were these business startup type people too. And
well, and that's because most of these podcasters, even if they are like us, they pretend not to be.
What do you mean?
I guarantee you there's so many entrepreneur podcasts out there where people put up this front as though they're full-time entrepreneurs, and they just happen to not mention that actually they're just like how we are, where they're working full-time jobs and doing the recording at 10:49 p.m. on a Wednesday night like we are right now. I mean, I guarantee you not all these podcasters that pretend to be full-time entrepreneurs are. We're just the ones that come out and say it.
Yeah, exactly. And we're in the learning phase. And actually, to clarify my story, like, I just started listening to stuff and getting into online stuff like like maybe like a year and a half ago, or maybe not even a year and a half ago. I think I first started, I signed up to Pat Flynn's email list, I think like end of March 2012. So I'm new to this too. And that's why if you ever hear me ask questions that maybe are obvious to people who've been doing it for years, it's not to me. And that's why I want people to hear that, hey, we're not these successful startup founders or anything like that, but we can still ask great questions and learn from the people that we interview. And we've already gotten great feedback from people that we've interviewed that, hey, you guys ask questions that all these other shows that, and they don't mention any of the shows, but you know, they're talking about some shows that have been started up by big startup founders that we ask better questions than them. And they enjoyed talking with us more than some of the other shows. So it shows you that you don't need to have this, company CEO award, whatever, to be doing what we're doing. I mean, we've already had some success with it, and being honest with people has actually paid off because people like that. We're honest about ourselves and we're honest about what we do.
All right. So that was just a little discussion about us. And like I said, we're interviewing John Lee Dumas in the main event today. He's putting out for the 200 or maybe close to 300 days in a row now, he's put out a new episode every stinking day. And there's been recently a couple copycats trying to do this every single day podcast. And I'm interested in getting into this with John.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. I just found
because some of these guys are beating us in the ratings, and they're, you know, they're full of spammy reviews and all this. They've been up for 3 days and they have 100 reviews, something like this. And they're basically just ripping off his idea altogether of his podcast. And it's kind of shocking that someone would just so blatantly do that.
Oh, because I found it and I showed it to Dan, and Dan was like, it's probably just one episode or something like that. Cause he actually interviewed John. And I don't think he was as blatant with John as like how much he ripped off the format. But no, I went and listened to like three others, and he completely just rips off all of John's interview format. It's crazy. And that's why I don't know if we'll link to this podcast in the notes or if we'll talk about it. We'll have to talk about that before we bring John on. But we're going to talk about him about that, because these are all different topics that I haven't heard him talk about. So it'll be interesting to hear from John, because John's such a laid back and very nice guy. I've never heard him raise his voice or get upset. I haven't met him in person, but he's just always very nice. He's very honest about how much money he makes with it and everything like that, that I'm sure it'll make him a little awkward to ask about, hey, what do you think of people ripping off your idea? And stuff like that. And I'm sure he'll put a lighthearted answer to it, but we'll have to dig in more to it.
Well, Matt, we'll ask him if that made him want to ignite.
Exactly.
All right. If I have a sound effect, ba-doom-tsh, there we go. So without any further ado, let's get on to John Lee Dumas in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
That's right, it's main event time here on the Entrepreneur Showdown, and in today's main event, we welcome a man who almost needs no introduction. In less than a year's time, he turned an aha moment into one of the most listened to podcasts on iTunes. He has interviewed entrepreneurs from all over the world and has featured some of the biggest names in business. He's the man who has undertaken the daunting task of releasing one podcast a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. He's turned his podcast into a very profitable business and even has a best-selling book on Amazon. This time last year, you'd be asking yourself, who? But by now, you know the name of the man I'm talking about, the man who's always ready to ignite, John Lee Dumas. John, what's going on, man?
Who? John Lee Dumas here, guys.
Yeah, what's going on, John? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm excited to be here. Dan, Joe, thanks for the invite. I think you guys have a great show going on, and I'm just happy to contribute.
Well, happy to have you. Now, John, most of the time, we ask our guests to tell our audience where they can go to learn more about you, but I'm guessing probably most of them already know about you. So I want to ask you, you've been a guest on almost as many podcasts as you've been a host on, it seems like. But what is the one interview podcast that you would point someone to if you said, they don't know who I am, I want them to go listen to this podcast where you were the interviewee?
Well, after this interview, I will say this one. How's that?
But so let's get number two then. Let's
number
get your
two will be episode 150 of Entrepreneur on Fire, because I have to give props to Steve Young. This guy came out and he was very unskilled as a host, and now he has his own podcast and he's doing great. But he said, John, I love the show. Can I interview you? So he turned the tables on me on episode 150, and you can go to eofire.com/John Lee Dumas, where he interviews me on my own show. So it was kind of surreal. It was super cool. And that's my second favorite.
Awesome. Hey, you can't go wrong with your own show. Right, Joe?
Hey, exact. I mean, I admit I haven't listened to all your podcasts, John. Sorry.
What?
How many are there? Like 400?
310.
Okay.
310. Okay. Now, John, what we really wanted to bring you on to talk about today is something that Joe and I discussed with one another in round two. And we talked about the merits of two guys like us who are still kind of stuck in the middle of being a wantrepreneur and an entrepreneur, hosting a podcast about entrepreneurship. And I know at you one time kind of found yourself in a similar situation. So how did you feel about that then, and how do you feel about that now?
It totally was a daunting task for me. I mean, I was completely a newbie. I wasn't even a wantrepreneur at the time because I didn't even really know exactly what this online entrepreneur thing even was. I just knew that I wanted to create a podcast. That's really all that I knew. Luckily for me, I did have a mentor, Jamie Tardy, who was able to point me in the right direction, take me down to Blog World, a conference, and introduced me to some people who were doing some great things. It ended up being my first guest on the show. But before that, man, it was scary. It was daunting. I didn't know which direction to turn. I didn't know why anybody would want to talk to me. But now I understand it, you know, 300 plus episodes later, it's just a friendly atmosphere, you know, around the entrepreneurial world, because we're all looking to expand our brands, build our businesses. And, you know, when your show blows up, it already has on some levels, but when it blows up even more, I mean, it's just going to help me, Entrepreneur on Fire, just like I want to help you guys. It's just like a win-win for both of us.
Okay, so let me tell you something that Joe and I talked a little bit about personally in the past, and then we brought it to the show yesterday. And this is self-doubt in yourself. You know, even though we have this good thing going, we're pointing, you know, our trajectory is pointed way in the right direction. We're super happy with where we are at now. But there's still that little part of you that almost feels like, am I a fraud for talking about entrepreneurship and discussing these topics when, you know, maybe there's people listening who are way ahead of us and they're just looking down on us for talking about these things that we maybe have no idea about?
Fraud is a great word, and I'd love to hang on that, because Seth Godin talks so eloquently about the imposter syndrome. And that's what you have to realize, Dan, and that's what you have to realize, Joe, and every single listener. There's not a person in the United States of America, in the world, that doesn't have to cope every single day on some levels with the imposter syndrome. President Obama wakes up every morning, I promise you, and Obama, if you're listening, you know it's true. He tightens his tie, and he looks in the mirror, and he says, who am I to be leading this world? Just like I think, who am I to be talking to Seth Godin? Just like Seth Godin thinks, who am I to be reaching 200,000 blog readers every single day? Every single person has this imposter syndrome. So listen, just accept it, suck it up, and drive on, because it's innate. We're all born with it. So stop being a crybaby about it.
But the whole point is, hey, we're talking about starting businesses, starting everything like that. And we admit it, we're honest about it, but we haven't started something that's been successful. So why can we talk about it? Why do we have the right to talk about that? Shouldn't we leave it to people who have already done that type of stuff?
Because you're going to be talking to so many people who are in your exact situation who have not been successful yet. And they can glean so much wisdom that you can't glean from somebody that's already successful. And that's exactly why I set the premise up of Entrepreneur on Fire that I did. Because one thing I was realizing about all these podcasts that were out there is, yeah, they were talking to great entrepreneurs, but they were just sharing what was successful right now. There's that huge chasm that exists between when you start and then when you're successful. What's in between? We don't get that. So that's why I make all of my guests talk about a failure early on in their journey, and then about an aha moment, and then how they turn that aha moment into success, because I want the listeners to see that everybody was at that starting point. So by you guys talking about being wantrepreneurs and sidepreneurs, people can relate to that. It's going to give them motivation and hope to just start, because that's the hardest thing, is just starting, Joe. That just starting point. That's where people get stuck, is never starting, never get that ball moving. But you guys started, you reached out to me, you reached out to other people in the industry, we said yes, and now guess what? We're on your show because you started. So you've taken that step towards success. You may not be successful yet, but you've taken that step forward, and that's a shining example to all your listeners.
So when was the point after, I don't know if it's a certain episode or if it's a certain, you made, started making money. When did you say, okay, now I am an entrepreneur? Because you didn't always think that.
Absolutely not. And for me, I knew that I wasn't going to be monetizing at any point soon. I knew that I was just going to be striking out on my own, trying to fulfill a dream. And I will say that I do feel like I did make a tipping point, and that took place about 5 months after I launched. It was March of 2013. I started to be approached by some sponsors that said, John, you're growing a huge audience. We want to be sponsoring your show. We want to be in front of your audience. And we started talking numbers, and before I knew it, I was running a podcast that was generating five figures a month, on pace for six figures in my first fiscal year of starting my, of actually monetizing my podcast, the year 2013. And that's when I had to sit back and say, you know what? I've created a business out of just an idea, and now I'm monetizing to the tune of five figures per month, six plus figures per year. I'm an entrepreneur. But that being said, it can all change tomorrow. And that's the life of an entrepreneur. The ups, the downs, the failures, the picking yourself up and moving forward in different directions.
So, John, in between the time when you started and when you got to that moment where you started realizing, hey, maybe I am an entrepreneur in this, what was your biggest hurdle or your biggest failure, or your biggest thing that happened that gave you self-doubt in between those two points?
You know, I can actually pinpoint it to a moment. So for me, the new and noteworthy is something that I always talk about, and you guys are experiencing that right now. You're tops in the new and noteworthy in iTunes, which is the best advertising space for podcasters in the universe. So you're getting a ton of organic traffic, a ton of views of your pictures, of your podcast in iTunes because of that. And that's where 85% of all downloads are generated. So it's an incredible place to be. And for me, I was very highly ranked in the top business podcasts. I was number one for iTunes for almost all the 8 weeks that I could possibly be featured, as I think you guys are going to experience as well. And then when I dropped off of that, I saw an immediate 40% decrease in my downloads. I saw my emails that I was getting reached out to drop by about the same percent. And I was really kind of having looked in the mirror and say, is this daily model really going to work? I am busting my hump every single day producing a daily show. I just saw a 40% decrease just because I dropped off of the new and noteworthy. Am I ever going to get back to those numbers that I had at the height of the new and noteworthy? And sure enough, it was a slow and steady haul. It wasn't anything that was a sharp trajectory up. But ever since I had that drop, day 57 of the new and noteworthy being kicked out of it, I've seen nothing but an upward trend to where in July of 2013, I logged 307,000 unique downloads in over 145 countries.
Wow, that's awesome. So, yeah, and we are. It's, and Joe and I call it the new and noteworthy roller coaster, because it really is. Like, we'll get on there, oh, yeah, you know, number two, sweet, right there. And then Joe will get on 30 minutes later and be like, oh, God, we're not even on the front, you know, above the fold. So it's definitely a crazy ride.
You'll kill yourself doing that.
We will. We
got to
stop.
It fluctuates.
It's like a drug, though. You just got to keep looking.
Just take screenshots when you're number one. That's my only recommendation.
There you go.
Done. Done.
I like
Come on.
That.
What do you think? So, John, you talked about your number of listeners, and you truly do have just a huge fan base. Have you had any listeners email you or get in touch with you and say, John, your show gave me my aha moment?
All the time, every single day. Literally, you guys will start experiencing the same thing, because there are so many people starved for content out there looking for just the answer, and there's no better way to get that than when you're actually a captive audience, when you're driving to work, you know, when you're at the gym. People are starting to consume these podcasts at an alarming, in a good way, rate because of smartphones and all these different things. So I'm getting these emails that are saying, John, you have provided me my aha moment. I'm going off in this direction or that direction. And I've been the first guest on many podcasts that claim I was their inspiration for starting that podcast, that aha moment of at least 15 podcasts. And I'm happy to say are out there inspiring other people due to my book and my podcast.
Well, let's dissect your show. You have, I think yours was probably the first one that I've heard that actually has like a strict format. And, I mean, don't you just get bored of asking the same questions over and over again? Doesn't that get dull after a while?
Well, if anybody had the same story, then I would probably get bored. But everybody has their own unique story. And that's the format of Entrepreneur on Fire, is that I want to hear your story as an entrepreneur. I want to hear a specific failure that you've encountered. And nobody's encountered the same two failures. I want to hear a specific aha moment. And nobody's encountered the same aha moment. Then I want to hear what you're successful at right now. So every single time, the format doesn't change, but the story always changes. There's never the same or even similar stories. And it's amazing how varied the podcast can be from day to day, despite the same format. And that was one reason why I created the format, Joe, is because that's exactly what I wanted as a listener. So I was my own avatar. I created Entrepreneur on Fire for me, for what I wanted. I wanted a 7-day a week show. So I knew that every day when I woke up, a new podcast was going to be there waiting for me. I wanted to show that when I pressed the play button, I knew what I was going to be getting, that I knew that I wasn't going to be wasting my time, because my time was very valuable. I only had a 30-minute drive to work. And if I blew it, that was a blown 30 minutes that I could have used with something positive. So there are some podcasts that I'd be pressing the play button on, and yeah, they didn't have a quote-unquote format. And so because of that, they sometimes went nowhere, and I felt like I wasted my time. And I wanted my listeners to know that no matter what, they were going to hear the journey of that guest, whether it be interesting or not interesting. That is what I was going to force out of every single guest, by hook or by crook. So I made the format of Entrepreneur on Fire because that's what my avatar wanted, and I was my own avatar.
So, okay, you hear all the time entrepreneurs saying, hey, if you really want to be successful and make a lot of money, whatever, you got to automate all the tasks in your business. But you can't automate all your interviews. And since you're doing 7 days a week, aren't you just going to get chained to that format and never have the, I guess, the freedom that you're probably looking for?
So the amount of freedom I have is incredible. I do 8 interviews every single Monday. I finish the edits up that evening. I am done for the entire week. Now, show me another business that makes 6 figures a year that finishes everything on Monday, and I'll show you a really happy and free entrepreneur. And that's the situation that I'm in. Now, I am busting my hump the rest of the week because I choose to on other aspects of my business. I'm running a mastermind. I'm creating products and services to go along with my brand. I'm not just going to settle on my 6-figure sponsorship deals that I have for Entrepreneur on Fire. I could, but I don't. So I get everything done by batching on Mondays. And yes, it's a very long day and it's emotionally draining, but that's one day of the week that I sacrifice to make Entrepreneur on Fire an efficiently run machine. So I couldn't be more thrilled with how I've set my schedule.
So John, you've got this batching process that you do, and I know you have plenty of systems in place. What are your most important systems? And maybe detail out what are the systems that are in place to make Entrepreneur on Fire what it is.
My favorite system that I have in place is Schedule Once. It's a tool that I will never live without again. I tried to live without it when I first started. Luckily, I was quickly put onto it. It's how we scheduled this interview today. I mean, Dan, you reached out to me, asked me to be on the show. I said, sure, here's my link. Book a time that works for you, and you are given available times that I could be on. There is no back and forth between me and you. Oh, what about Thursday, 8 a.m. or 9 p.m.? No, I can't do that. What about this? It's like, here's the link. If you can find a show that works for you, I would love to be on. Here's all my information. You don't even have to ask for it. Here's my Skype ID. Here's my bio. Here's everything right there. And the same thing happens for Entrepreneur on Fire. Whenever I reach out to somebody or somebody reaches out to me to be on the show, I either respond or in that email where I'm reaching out to them with the link for Entrepreneur on Fire for them to book themselves. And it's all automated. It goes into my calendar. It goes into an Excel spreadsheet, and it's just there waiting for me. So that's my favorite system for batching and automating all the interviews that I do on a daily and weekly basis.
I know what you mean because since right now we're in the early stages, we're reaching out to just bunches of people all the time, and we always have those back and forth of, what about this time? What about that time? And like Dan and I have mentioned, like, we work during the day, so we can't always do during the day. And so we'll say, okay, we can't do during the day, but then they'll send back a time that's during the day.
you're dealing with very busy people. They're not like going to go back and read your entire email chain. I mean, you're only going to get so many emails back from Pat Flynn. You better knock it out of the park the first time. And you're going to do that by saying, hey, do any of these times work? And give him a lot of times on that schedule once for somebody like that. He'll choose one. He'll lock it in. He's happy. You're happy. And then everybody goes home happy.
So, okay, John, so what's your long-term plan for this? Because if, say, at one point you do want to step away and maybe do start like your own another side business or something like that, how would you get off of this train of having to produce content every day of the week?
You know, I say if I ever do get to that point, which I'm not foreseeing anytime soon, because I truly do love what I'm doing and have such a great schedule in place and really love the fact that Entrepreneur on Fire is inspiring so many people on a daily basis around the world. But hey, if I do, all good things must come to an end. I mean, there's people like yourselves, other podcasters that are stepping into the fold at all times. I could see myself winding things down and walking away into the sunset off into another venture. I mean, again, I'm not saying that that's going to happen in a year, 2, 5, 10 years. But if that does happen, I'd have no problem winding things down. I'm not looking for a big sellout or, you know, selling the Entrepreneur on Fire brand. That's not anything that's in my periphery right now. I'm really excited with what I have created with the podcast, with the listeners, with my email list, with my mastermind. I have a lot of great things going on right now that I want to continue. But like I said, all good things do come to an end. So at some point when it's time to walk away, I'll do it in the best possible way for my listeners.
So you would never sell your platform to someone else. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, you know, when that time comes, I will definitely look at all the options, but I don't think a bad option is just winding things down. That's something that a lot of people are always thinking they need to package things in a way where they're eventually going to be able to remove themselves from it. Well, I don't want to package Entrepreneur on Fire that way because I am the heart and soul of Entrepreneur on Fire. And if I tried to package it differently, it would feel fake. And Entrepreneur on Fire would not work if it felt fake. So I'm the heart and soul. I'm happy to be that. And if it comes a time to either sell or walk away, then that will happen.
So John, I have a question, and this goes back to the talking about all the, you know, handling all the people emailing you, trying to set up interviews and all of this. For your show, when you're accepting emails from potential guests and you get an email from someone that you just, it does not fit the mold of your show, whether they're not ready or they're not at that point, what's the most tactful way that you use to let them down easy?
Well, when I do get an email like that, I usually will take the time to say, listen, Entrepreneur on Fire interviews today's most successful and inspiring entrepreneurs. Please fill out this form, and then I'll direct them to a Google Doc form, and that form will say, what is your most successful moment, or what are you most successful at right now? What's your biggest failure? What's your biggest aha moment? And then honestly, if they fill out that form, they take the time, and I read it, and it just doesn't measure up, I'll email them back and say as much. I'll say, listen, you currently don't meet the criteria for Entrepreneur on Fire right now. If you feel like you do later on, please do email back. But this is the situation. I mean, guys, I'm an army captain, and I do not try to blow smoke up people's butt. I'm just like, this is how it is. This is how it's going to be. I'd love to have you on the show when the time is right. That's not now.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you about that. And I just wanted to say thank you for your service. I don't always hear people say that to you, and that gets me ticked off because I don't have the balls to do what you did. So I say thank you for
all
your service.
Well, I appreciate your appreciation, Joe.
Do you? And this, is there anything that you took from your experience in Iraq that you were able to translate into when you started Entrepreneur on Fire?
100%. I really feel that my batching system was a result of my time as an officer in the Army. When I was in Iraq at 23 years old, we woke up every single day and we had so many things to do from that point that we woke up until that point that we were hitting the sack at the end of the day. And so because of that, I had to batch. I had to get everything done in one sitting that needed to be done and then move on to the next task. Otherwise, there was no way to get everything done. So I realized that Parkinson's law so early on in life that literally the tasks will expand to fit the time that you allot them. So basically, if you give yourselves 3 hours to do something, it's probably going to take you 3 hours. But if you give yourself 45 minutes for that same task, you are going to sit down and get stuff done. You're not going to open up Facebook. You're not going to look at that text message that you just got. You're just going to sit down and focus because you know you need to. So I always know that when I have 8 back-to-back episodes of Entrepreneur on Fire that I need to kick out, everything else is off the plate. There's no inefficiencies. It's boom, boom, boom. And then next thing I know, it's 4:00. I had done 8 interviews. I'm done for the week minus editing. That's a pretty impressive day.
So, John, I have a question about this batching because I know a lot of people, when they hear the terms batching, they hear monotony. They think boredom because no matter what you do that's fun or that you enjoy, if you do it long enough, some level of boredom will set in. What do you do? Do you have any tricks? Is it coffee? Is it music? What do you do to try to beat that monotony?
What I did to beat the monotony was to choose something that I'm passionate about, that I resonate with, that really is my authentic self. I can never get bored talking to inspiring and successful entrepreneurs. And so when I get on call number 6 of 8, and it is Ian from Lifestyle Business, and he's just cranking away, and I'm going back and forth with him, and we're interacting, that's not monotonous to me. Yes, it's batching, but it's not monotonous. It's my 6th interview of the day, but it's a whole new person. It's a whole new story. It's a whole new batch of energy. And man, I am loving that conversation. And that's why I chose my given profession, Entrepreneur on Fire, where I host a daily podcast.
So do you have anything you do that kind of gets you in the zone? I know I heard a podcast earlier, a Fizzle with Corbett Barr, and he says what gets him in the zone is he drinks a cup of coffee, a Coors Light, and smokes a cigar, and that puts him in the mood to produce fantastic content. Now, I'm not saying you have that exact cocktail, but do you have anything similar that you kind of do that gets you in the zone?
Hardly.
Well, just to clarify, because I do know those guys, I'm pretty sure that was Chase Reeves that said that.
Okay, was it? Okay, okay.
But for me, I have a very consistent schedule, and I like to wake up in the morning, and I live right in the bay here in San Diego, a gorgeous bay. And the first thing that I do, 6 a.m., I'm putting on my headphones, I'm popping on a recent podcast, maybe it's yours, maybe it's Fizzle, maybe it's somebody else's, and I'm doing a mile power walk around the bay. I'm getting some fresh air, I'm getting my blood flowing, I come back, hit a shower, and then I sit down with a cup of tea, fire up the computer, and that's my day. That's how I start. So that's how I center myself every morning. I don't go for jogs, I don't do a big workout. I just do a nice power walk to get the blood flowing, and that starts my day.
Exercise is the best tool for anything, pretty much, and sleep too. So that's my take. I had a question about, okay, you have all these different guests, and you actually get a chance to talk with them. Is there any, I guess, follow-up that you do with them, or any way you try and stay connected to all 310 guests, or you just kind of pick and choose what you do?
So I do have my systems in place again every single week, the week after. So 7 days after the actual interview, every single guest on Entrepreneur on Fire will get a very personalized thank you email from me that I'm actually composing, that I'm sending. I take the time to do that every single week because they took the time to come on my show. So besides saying thank you in the post-production, I'm also taking the time to send them a personalized email afterwards. Also, I also put them into my, what I call, Twitter list. And so I usually tweet about 12 to 15 times per day. Only 2 to 3 of those are actually for Entrepreneur on Fire. The other 12-ish are for my past guests, because I do have 15,000 Twitter followers who are pretty engaged and active. And so I like to promote my past guest stuff. For one, it's better for my followers because they're getting a variety of great content. And for two, it's supporting and promoting my past guests and saying, hey, I haven't forgotten about you guys. Thank you again for what you do. Here's a retweet to share your content with my audience.
Interesting. I mean, just because we're starting to get guests that are now past guests, we're trying to figure out, hey, what should we do to, I guess, keep them in our network and keep them connected? And you'd be the perfect person to ask because you've had to talk to like 300 plus people. So, okay, for someone who wants to get on this producing content type thing, are you, because you're big on doing the podcast and you do an audio blog, you don't even do the writing for it, are you saying that, is it you don't like to write, or you think maybe the blogging thing is overdone and it's too saturated and you're starting on, everyone's going to start wanting to do audio type stuff?
Nope, I don't think that at all. I think that you're always going to have your sector of people who love audio and will never read a blog. I think you'll have your sector of people who love blogs and will never listen to audio. And then think you'll have your people that are a mixture of both. I personally, when I'm consuming, I'm a mixture of both. I like podcasts, but I also like reading blogs. And for me, I know that I cannot produce content via the written form in any kind of efficient or quality format, so I choose not to. I'm sure that I could eventually get good if I worked at it and worked at it and worked at it, but I'm focused on my podcast. I have my team in place, and our director of content creation here at Entrepreneur on Fire, Kate Erickson, does our daily blog post at entrepreneuronfire.com. So that's our focus, is just producing high quality content on a very consistent and high level basis.
So who do you think should do a podcast? Do you have to have a certain temperament? Do you have to have a certain, I don't know, any type of certain quality to be doing what you're doing?
No, I think everybody that has any desire to increase their demographic, to increase their audience, should start a podcast. So there's going to be a lot of people that are saying, but I don't have the personality to do a podcast. Well, you may not right now, but if you do it long enough, then you will get better. You'll develop a personality. Your listeners will appreciate it because they can consume your content that you're creating in multiple ways. And they'll enjoy hearing you get better as well. They'll enjoy that journey. I mean, I love when my listeners email me and say, John, I just heard about you last month. I went back to episode one and I listened to all 300 episodes in the last month. OMG, have you improved? And they love that because that just shows that I'm not some professional radio host, you know, like David Letterman or Jay Leno or somebody that's just like born to do this, that I was Joe Schmo when I started and I've slowly improved as I've done more and more.
Are you trying to get to like a radio television spot, or is that your...
No, radio's
that's not a
dead.
Dream? Radio's dead?
Put a fork in it, bro.
What about television? Are you interested in that or no?
No, I don't see that. I mean, television, you're just going to have to, you know, not the traditional form of television, because I'm not going to be subjected to the whims of people that are in place in the old guard, so to speak. You know, those people need to die off before I venture into that. Or, you know, potentially I'll be doing like my own Roku or Hulu Plus channel or something like that.
Oh,
I don't know, but
yeah,
not
go.
Traditional.
Well, John, I listening to your Barbara Corcoran interview, if you ever are in need of a job, I think she could probably use you as a pool boy. She was rather enamored with you.
We did flirt for about 41 minutes.
So on that note, John, I want to throw back to something you mentioned earlier in the podcast. Yeah. I want to throw back to something you mentioned earlier in the interview, and you were talking about how many podcasters you influence, and you were the first guest on their show. And you know, you can really see that what you are doing is rubbing off on other people. And this kind of intersects with something that Joe and I have noticed recently, because we are following this new and noteworthy pretty closely while we're on it. And this podcast all of a sudden popped up out of nowhere. And I'm not going to say the name, but it popped up out of nowhere. It had like 60 reviews after the first episode. And I was like, oh, Joe, what is this? And then I sent Joe on his mission to go listen to this new podcast and see how it hurdled us and broke all these barriers. And so, Joe, I'm putting you on the spot, but can you take it from here?
Well, I went and listened, and you were actually on the show. It only has a couple episodes, but you were one of the guests for it. And I guess he wasn't as blatant with on you, when he interviewed you, but I listened to some other ones. And I mean, just to be straight, like, he blatantly like rips off your whole format. He uses he starts with a quote, he starts with a failure moment, then he goes to an arrived moment, and then he has a six question like what you do with your lightning round, and the last question is pretty much the same, just worded a little different. Like, what do you say to someone like that?
My reaction to stuff like that is imitation is the best form of flattery. And, you know, I wasn't the first person to interview entrepreneurs. There was Andrew Warner and David Simon Garland before me, and they're still rocking and rolling. Both of them have been on my show, and there's still going to be people to come after that. And so I wish everybody the best of luck. I rarely say no to an interview when somebody reaches out to me and asks me to be on their show, because people paid it forward to me when I first started. There were people before I even had my show that said yes, like your Pat Flynn's, like your Derek Halperns, Amy Porterfield's, Mike Stelzner's. And now it's up to me, I feel, to continue to carry that torch and to kind of, for that good karma, to pay it forward. Because I wish the best for anybody that's going to be jumping into the entrepreneurial world. So imitation or no imitation, best of luck to you, and I salute you.
John, you're such a nice guy.
You're so classy. I know there's some like resentment in there. You just won't show it.
So let's kind of translate that away from your specific situation, but just talk about in general. how do you think our listeners who maybe have their own business, or maybe this is, I'm sure you're familiar with Spencer Hawes at Niche Pursuits and his niche website kind of being ripped off completely, very similar. But that person actually kind of took over his Google rankings for a little bit from ripping off his own site. Is there something, I mean, I know you can say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but is there a proper way to handle something like that? I mean, or do you just kind of try to beat them at your own game, keep doing what you do?
Hey, I love the quote, if you can't take the heat, get your ass out of the kitchen. Because listen, competition is what entrepreneurialism is all about. And I mean, that's one reason why I came in, because I came in and did it more consistent, higher quality, and better than the people that were currently doing it. And if someone's going to come and trump me, it's going to make me step my game up. So it's only better for everybody around. I've had Spencer Hawes on my show. I like him. He's a nice guy. And guess what? That site made him step up his game, and it was better for him. It was better for his clients and his followers. So competition's a great thing. We live in the USA.
Love it.
Well, one of the reasons we started like having a different format for our show is because we listen to tons of podcasts, and we feel like a lot of them ask the same type of questions, and we were kind of like, we didn't want to bring you on and hear your story. No offense, because we've heard your story on tons of other podcasts.
Sure. I'm glad not to share it, believe me.
So that's why we wanted to change up the formula and just talk about specific topics, and that always leads to something else. But, I mean, in this case, this is someone who's trying to actually do exactly what you're doing and trying to, they just took your whole format. It's not they took the interview format. Everyone does interviews, but you took your whole format and ripped that off. That,
like, plagiarism almost.
It's plagiarism. Right? Is it not plagiarism?
Well, I don't know what plagiarism is or is not. I'm truly not a lawyer. I'm not a literature major or any of those things. I do know, again, that imitation is the best form of flattery. If this guy can do an Entrepreneur on Fire format better than John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire, then power to him. And, you know, good luck and, you know, best of luck. I mean, that's all I can say. You know, I love what you guys have done with getting out there and trying to carve out your own niche. And you guys are doing things differently, and that is going to make you stand apart. And that's what I do with Entrepreneur on Fire. I knew that I was being told by my mentors, by my peers, John, just do a weekly show. That's what other people are doing. And I was like, that's not different. That's no USP. Like, I want to be different. So I did a 7-day a week show. I instituted a rigid format. I did this, I did that differently. So I did stand apart from the crowd. And there was a reason that people took notice, just like what you guys are doing. People are taking notices because you hear me interviewed on one show. It's not that different than me being interviewed on another show. Sometimes I'm interviewed 7 times in one day, and it's just like I've done the exact same interview 7 exact times. So there's a point where people need to realize if they want to come in and have a show that gets a new and growing audience, they have to be different. So if this person who you're referring to is really going to be growing a show based off of comping Entrepreneur on Fire, then power to them and, you know, best of luck.
Well, and step up.
You better keep your game up, because I'm still going to stay 7 days a week. If you go 14 days a week, I may just have to say, wow, I got to tip my hat to you, because that's impressive.
Okay, so one of the things that you're currently working on, you talked about how you do all this Entrepreneur on Fire main show content on Mondays, but you said you're working super hard on all kinds of things the rest of the week, and one of the newest things you're working on is this mastermind program you're getting up and going. Can you tell us kind of about that?
Sure, I'd love to, because one thing, Dan and Joe, that you will definitely be realizing as you're growing your audience, the emails will start to pile up, the tweets will start to pile up, and your fans and your listeners will be reaching out to you and giving you just nuggets of gold saying, Dan, Joe, I love your stuff. This is what I'm suffering with. This is my major problems right now. And I was getting the same things over and over again. John, I'm taking my leap, or I'm a wantrepreneur or a sidepreneur, or I am an entrepreneur who started my journey, but I feel like I'm all alone. I feel like, you know, X, Y, Z, I just don't have anybody to support me, to encourage me, to motivate me. And so I decided to launch FireNationElite.com. It's a mastermind for Entrepreneur on Fire listeners who want to be part of a community. These are people that want to be in an environment where there's motivation, where there's exchanging of ideas, where there's support, where there's encouragement. We've had people in this mastermind, this now 70 people and growing, that are launching podcasts, and those podcasts are going to top and new and noteworthy because everybody in the Fire Nation League Mastermind is then jumping in, giving them a 5-star rating, a 5-star review, doing all these things for them because we are supporting that person. So we have like 4 podcasts in the new and noteworthy right now from Fire Nation Elite. We're doing the same thing for blog posts. We had a guy that posted on Social Media Examiner, and because we supported him, he had the most comments Social Media Examiner ever saw because everybody went and commented on that blog post. And we're doing that for every way, shape, and form, everybody's business. We're all there. We're all supporting each other in a great format. So we have this mastermind. It has annual meetups. We have webinars with past guests that we bring on. We're doing all these really cool things in this mastermind format. And again, I have over 70 people and growing, and I'm growing it very slowly and organically, guys, because I do have currently, I'm sitting on over 200 applications, but I'm not willing to open the floodgates up to this because I'm committed to talking to each and every person one-on-one for at least 15 minutes before offering them a spot in Fire Nation Elite, because it's important that I think that they're the right fit for Fire Nation Elite, but just as importantly, I want them to think that they're the right fit for Fire Nation Elite. So that's a conversation that we have. For instance, I do bust my hump the rest of the week besides Mondays. Tomorrow, which is a Friday, I have 16 of these calls lined up for 8 hours, 30 minutes, 30 minutes back to back. So that's one thing that I'm really excited about, FireNationElite.com. You can check it out. There's a video there of me dancing and explaining the program. You can sign up for a chat with me for 15 minutes, and we can just have a good time. And if it's not for you, no hard feelings. But if it is, we'll make the decision together about whether or not you should be inducted.
Now, John, there's something I love to do, and this is one of the reasons I really like this freestyle format, that I can take 2 different sections of the podcast and kind of combine them into a new question. So what I'm going to ask you is, as now you're now coaching people and kind of showing them the podcasting ropes, if you were to just say in this scenario, one of your students were to want to do this podcast, and I guess they show you their first episode, and it's one of those blatant ripoffs of yours, but you're saying imitation's the sincerest form of flattery, and you know, there's been interview podcasts before and there will be some after you. But as a coach, now you're in a different position. You have to guide this person to do what's best for maybe his business or the future of his podcast. In that situation, how would you coach that student?
My actual coaching advice, because I do offer coaching as well, and I do take a maximum of 4 students per month, every single month. I'm typically booked up for at least 2 months in advance, but I do coaching. So I can definitely relate to the question you're asking. So what I would honestly say is, listen, if you're going to run a successful podcast, it has to resonate with you, with your personality, with your authentic self. If you truly believe this format that you created is exactly who you are and the kind of podcast that you want to share with the world, and not just what you think is going to be successful because of the track record of Entrepreneur on Fire, then go for it. And I will give you the support that as your coach you need. But I want you to think about that. And until you can tell me that that is truly why you're creating it, because it does resonate to the core with you, then I would not recommend or support it.
Okay, so you've got the podcast. You've got actually multiple podcasts available on the iTunes store now. One of them in the new and noteworthy with us, by the way. We've noticed that. And then you've got your Amazon, your ebook that's super successful. I think the best-selling podcasting book out there. And then you've got the mastermind, and you've got your coaching program. Do you have any room for anything else as far as business-wise goes?
Heck yeah. I'm creating 2 amazing products right now. One's called Six Figure Podcasting, where I share from step one to step done how I created Entrepreneur on Fire from a 0 online presence to launching a podcast to a business that was generating over 5 figures a month, projecting 6 figures a year in 6 months. And so that's a really exciting product that I'm working on. And then number 2, I'm starting the Fire Nation Elite Bootcamp, which is literally a bootcamp for entrepreneurs that are starting and they are just like hands in the air. What do I do? I am clueless. It's idea formation, it's mindset, and then it's taking those next steps to get things going. So those are 2 products I have in the works, both of which I'm really looking at. They definitely will both be high-end products because I'm putting a lot of time and effort into them and sharing a lot of insider information. But man, they're 2 fun products to work on.
So one of those products is purely about monetizing a podcast. Do you think everybody should try to monetize their podcast, or do you think there's some people that should maybe just do it for fun or do it to drive people to their monetization strategies?
The latter. I think that podcasting is a great way to just drive people to your brand, to increase your demographic. If you already have a great business in place and you have a really good funnel in place, just use podcasting to really improve your reach, your demographic.
Well, John, I know we've taken up enough of your time. Now, everyone knows entrepreneuronfire.com is where to go to find out everything about you and your podcast. Where should they go to find out about the Mastermind and about the new products? Same place?
FireNationElite.com is the Mastermind. And I have a products tab on eofire.com, which has the little coming soon of these two products. Neither one of them are released yet. And the book that you had mentioned that is the number one selling book on podcasting in Amazon is Podcast Launch, over 125 star reviews. I think the next book on podcasting has like 26. So it's a clear winner, mostly because it does come with 15 video tutorials that take you step by step through the podcasting process. So those are my main gigs right now. I really enjoy talking with both you guys.
Clear winner on Amazon and in our hearts, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
What an ending.
Oh, yeah. John, thanks for coming on. Thanks for your time today. We appreciate
it.
You sound like Barbara Corcoran now, Dan.
I don't have a pool yet, so you'll have to wait. It's 105 degrees here, so I don't think you want to leave San Diego for that.
Nope, not yet. Guys, thank you so much for letting me speak to you and your audiences. Have a great day.
Thanks, John.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, to find out more about this show and to see the show notes, check out EntrepreneurShowdown.com. Leave us some feedback in the comment section and let us know what you think. And if you like what you've heard, do us a huge favor and head to the iTunes store and leave us a 5-star review. So with that, for my partner Joe Cassandra, I'm Dan Franks. We'll see you next week.